We're just plowing right through this book. There are new sheets back on the table if you haven't picked any up yet. So last week, I'm glad that he cut my time shorter. Last week I got up here and there was 50 minutes to go, and I thought there's no way we'll get out of here at 10 till. And I got directed. Gary just about was out of disk space, and Andrea said I had to cut the scripture out when I put it on the app. I can't put that much on there. But I felt like we really got into a rhythm last week. I would tell you I can't teach for 50 minutes, but I like to talk in these situations. So it takes me back to my younger days when I would preach family devotions behind a clothes hamper. So I think that's still why my brother won't come and hear me speak. So as we look at Daniel chapter 10, Daniel's coming out of this vision of the 70 weeks. And I'm sure that everybody is clear on those 70 weeks. You understand it perfectly. I will say this for the book of Daniel. It's a tough book. There's a lot of deep, I think, teaching in it. There's some things for me that it's easy to understand after I've studied it, but there's still things that I struggle with. And chapter 10, there's some things in this that makes it even more difficult. A lot of theologians would say that chapter 10 really isn't sermon worthy or teaching worthy, but I think as we get into it, we're going to see, I would question those theologians, because there's still a lot of great teaching in chapter 10. But in the events of the way the book is moving, after this vision of the 70 weeks that we see in chapter 9, chapters 10 through 12, which will be the end of the book, these last three chapters really deal with focusing in on that last week. So as Daniel has got this vision, it's still future to him. But as we look at the vision, everything is the past now. Everything is history except for that last week. And we know that last week is 7 years. That time frame is the tribulation. And this is what the end of this will focus on. So as we start, we're going to read the first 9 verses. We'll talk about those verses, and then if we have time, we'll read what's left. So Daniel chapter 10, verse 1, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. And the message was true and one of great conflict, but he understood the message and had an understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks. I did not eat any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks were completed. On the 24th day of the first month, while I was by the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and feet like the gleam of polished bronze, and the sound of his words like the sound of a tumult. Now I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, while the men who were with me did not see the vision. Nevertheless, a great dread fell on them, and they ran away to hide themselves. So I was left alone and saw this great vision. Yet no strength was left in me, for my natural color turned to a deathly pallor, and I retained no strength. But I heard the sound of his words, and as soon as I heard the sound of his words, I fell into a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground. So we see Daniel has this vision. Unlike what we've been looking at, when Daniel has a vision, he explains what the vision was, and then we get the interpretation. As Daniel's writing now, he's just talking about this vision and what he sees and the person that he sees, which I think we're going to find very interesting as we look into this. But if we get the time frame, it tells us right away in verse 1 that it's in the third year of Cyrus. Now, if we go back to chapter 9, the vision that Daniel has of the 70 weeks, that's in the first year. It says of Darius, king of Persia. Darius is really a title, not a person. So Darius is talking about Cyrus the king. So the vision in chapter 9 is the first year of Cyrus. This vision is 2 years later. So Daniel's had some time. And we know what led up to the vision in chapter 9 was Daniel was reading in the book of Jeremiah. And he's reading about the 70 years of captivity that they would be, that they would, Israel would go under in Babylon. Daniel knows that that time frame is about, it's close because he's been in captivity for around 70 years and then he has this vision. So what he knows is going to happen, something's going to happen with his people, that they're going to be freed, they're going to get to go back. That's the first year of Cyrus. Cyrus does make a decree that people can go back. We've talked about this in previous studies. They could go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple. Now, on the decree to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, to rebuild the city, that's when the time frame starts counting the 70 weeks. Daniel doesn't know this right then, though. He just knows that it's getting near. So in chapter 9, we think that Daniel is, he's around 85, 86 years old. So in chapter 10, now he's getting closer to the age of 87. Maybe he's close to 88. As we would look at Daniel, what would we say about Daniel and his age? I'm glad somebody else said it. He's old. And some of you would say, no, he's not old. But Daniel is getting up there in age. And so he's starting to be concerned about, obviously, his people, knowing that the time has come. So what has happened? There's been a decree given 2 years ago for the people of Jerusalem, go back. Now, this is a land they've been held captive, but this captivity is probably different than what they were in Egypt. They've still been able to live lives. They haven't been so much as slaves. They've been able to live their life. Some of them have flourished. They've done very well. The decree is given, go back to Jerusalem, build your temple. God had moved through a pagan king, we see once again, to have them go back. And it's 2 years later. And Daniel has this other vision, and Daniel still is worried. And we see that Daniel in the first three verses is in mourning. Not Daniel the next morning, but he's in mourning. Daniel is heartbroken. He's going to the Lord in prayer, crying really over his people. Because with the age that he is, knowing that time is near when his people should be restored, I'm sure part of what's going through Daniel's mind is, will I get to see it? Will I get to see our people go back? And will the people go back and rebuild? Will they do what God is allowing them to do? So he's got a great concern for his people. And in verse 1, and I think this is interesting, Daniel has this vision, and he even writes that it was true. And we wouldn't think that he would have to write that it was true, but he wants people to know as he's writing, this vision that I had, it's true, but there was also great conflict. Now, we can look back on the vision and know that it's talking about the last 7 years. And we're talking about the tribulation time, the last 7 years of this world. Is there conflict in those 7 years? And is there conflict with God's people? Absolutely. There's great conflict. I think Daniel sees this vision in a couple ways. I think he has great hope that God will use his people again for a very special purpose that he called them out for in the beginning. What God wanted his people to be from the very beginning, he'll use them for that in the great tribulation. But there's also going to be some conflict because they're going to suffer greatly as well. So coming off the vision that he didn't fully understand, you know, we can look at the vision of the 70 weeks and we can say, I don't fully understand it. And we get to verify that vision with history. History tells us those things happen. We could look at our what they used to teach in school, some with history. We talked about those events that happened in those 70 weeks. It's verifiable. What we just don't know now is when the last 7 years will take place, that last week. But as Daniel gets this vision, there's a lot of things he doesn't understand about this. And now he gets a more detailed vision about the end. You know, even 2 years later, he's still trying to comprehend and make sense of what he's already seen. And now he gets a little bit more. Don't you like if there's something you're trying to learn and someone's teaching you and they're teaching you at a fast pace and you're just starting to get some of the basics and then they say, now let me show you this part. What do you say? Yeah, let's back up to the part I'm not getting yet. Let's go over that again. And that's kind of what Daniel's getting, really information overload here. He's been given a bunch. So in verses 2 and 3, Daniel says he's been in mourning for 3 entire weeks. And so it tells us a little bit about that for... Now these... We jump back and forth weeks, and weeks means years, and Daniel's been in mourning for 21 days. Okay, so 3 weeks, we're going back to days now. Daniel's been fasting. I hope Daniel didn't fast for 21 years. But this fast isn't like, I don't think, what we think of a fast. We think of a fast, we think of no food, maybe you drink water. That it wasn't this type of a fast. What Daniel was neglecting to give himself was any delicacies. And a lot of the meat he wouldn't eat, the bread that he would eat wouldn't have been good bread. It wouldn't have been the higher quality bread. We have to keep something in mind about Daniel. Daniel's like prime minister. So Daniel's not the average person in this Medo-Persia Empire. He's a high-ranking official. Do you think our people in government eat like we do? Probably not. The sandwich that we get in McDonald's is what Daniel's fasting on. Like that's bad bread. So Daniel's not, he's denying himself of all delicacies, anything that's extra that would be good. So, and part of that is a fast. We always think of fasting as just no food, and that's not always what fasting was. So he has no good food, no wine, and no ointment. And I think this is interesting too. So this ointment that they would wear, this would be oil, and it's for a couple different things. Number one, I'm starting to get this now. I used to laugh at my dad. We'd be over at his house and he would be putting lotion on. And I think, what are you putting lotion on? You're a guy. Like, what's wrong with you? So, like, I started noticing a few years ago, there's a certain age you hit when things just turn really good. And I notice, like, my knees, if I touch them, like, they flake off. So I'm in there lotioning up my legs, and I think, what is wrong with you? But you have to do that, or your skin starts to crack. You know, we get old skin. There's nothing like old skin. So Daniel is 87, 88 years old. He's denying himself of any oil, any ointment. So he's denying himself of the things that would protect him from the sun. We think about the UV rays. Oil was also used to help you smell better. So I'm thinking, boy, Daniel was very nice to be around at this time too. You know, they didn't have Old Spice back in those days. So Daniel really was denying himself because of this mourning. He was pouring himself out to the Lord. And Daniel was doing it on behalf of a nation, on behalf of his people. But we could ask the question then, why would Daniel be so troubled? Cyrus has already made a decree, you're free to go back. Go back and rebuild your temple. So what's wrong with Daniel? You know, we could ask, what's the problem? Because he's concerned not for just those that return to Jerusalem. Because imagine getting this decree. Your city lays waste. And for 70 years, because they disobeyed the Sabbath, 490 years worth of disobeying the land Sabbath, their city laid waste for 70 years. That was the punishment. That's what they owed God back. So for 70 years, it hasn't been inhabited. It's been nothing. But I'm going to free you to go back and rebuild. Now, they probably didn't have a Lowe's right down the road or Menards or the Home Depot. Building would be tough. Imagine if you've been away somewhere. Let's just say that the Indianapolis came here and they just took all of the people out of Marion and they took them down to Indianapolis. And we say we went into captivity. And they kept us there for 70 years, but they destroyed everything in Marion. And you could think, well, that would take about 10 minutes to destroy everything in Marion. And they take us down to Indianapolis, and for 70 years, we get accustomed to living in Indianapolis. And we have children, we start raising families, and you get used to a life in Indianapolis where you've been able to work, you've been able to, some of these people that were taken into captive, they flourished. And life was well living in this Babylonian, changing over to this Medo-Persian Empire. They'd done well for themselves. Now someone says, okay, all of you people from Marion that went into captivity, and I may have taken you when you were 15 years old and now you're 85, go back to Marion and rebuild your city. Now how many people you think would line up to get on the bus to go back? It's probably not going to be very many because you're comfortable. Why is Daniel troubled? Because God's giving them an opportunity to go rebuild their city, to rebuild right now their temple. But what's coming is they can rebuild their city and they don't go. And for 2 years, they've had this decree and this open door, go rebuild your temple, and they stay where they're at. Daniel's concern is that they didn't move. We look at who went. About 42,000 people went back to rebuild. And I'm sure, like anything that we do in life, there's always a group of people, if given the opportunity to go start something, there's always a group that will go and they're good starters. And then there's a group that just that sits back and they're going to say, I'm going to see how this goes. And if it goes well, I'll join in with them. But if it doesn't go well, I'm not going to risk it. I'm going to stay here where it's comfortable. And that would be part of the reason a lot of those people didn't go back. They want to see what happened with those that went. We hear the number 42,000 and we think that's a lot of people. The same thing has been happening with this nation that happened when they were in captivity in Egypt. God grew a great nation when they were in captivity. He's still allowing Israel as a people to flourish. He hasn't held them to this number that was taken into captivity. They're still growing as a nation. So when 42,000 go back, that's a small fraction of the number of people that were in captivity. And that's got Daniel concerned, because why won't they just go back? You know, God is allowing them the freedom to go rebuild the temple. We know through other prophets, through Haggai was the prophet that was used to encourage the people. They started building, then they stopped building because they faced people, their neighbors made fun of them, they ridiculed them, they got discouraged, they stopped. The people that are still in captivity are watching this from afar. And we're thinking, I'm not going to go back there to that. Why leave the comforts of here and subject myself to that? And it's got Daniel concerned. So if we think of all the reasons they wouldn't go back, those are the things. Number one, they're comfortable and they're thriving. And if I go back, I'm giving up everything that I'm depending on. So what's still the problem with Israel? Who are they depending on? It's not God. They're still depending on themselves and the world system. You know, they've heard about the resistance. Some of those that were born into captivity, they don't know they're in captivity. This is who they are as people. You know, if we got drug off to Indianapolis and we started having children, where do they belong? If I said, hey, we're going back home, they might say, call me when you get there. We're staying home. That's the same thing that they would have been facing and dealing with. But I think another thing that troubled Daniel was, as he's trying to process the vision of the 70 weeks, that's a very long time. That as Daniel looks at it, it's still all future. That's 490 years where there's a lot of problems in store for Israel. There's good in that vision, but everything's not good. And as Daniel gets all of this together, I'm sure to him it's very overwhelming. I've also thought about, too, why wouldn't Daniel go back? But I think we've got to understand a couple things about Daniel's position. Daniel was a high-ranking member. Now, he's made it through transitions, which these things don't happen. From the Babylonian Empire, now to this Medo-Persian Empire, he still kept a high ranking in his office. If Daniel stays, he could be the one that encourages his people to go. A lot of people think Daniel was too old. I don't believe that. I think if Daniel wanted to make the journey, he would have made the journey. Would there be an importance of Daniel being a high-ranking government member that would make it easier for his people to be able to leave? It would make it easier for them. You think he could help Cyrus, who maybe thought, well, maybe this isn't the best idea, maybe I ought to stop this, if he had Daniel saying, let them go? Daniel stayed. Now, think about this. Daniel stayed in captivity to help his people. That's something that a lot of people wouldn't do as well. Because Daniel had the power, Daniel would have had the wealth. He could have went back to Jerusalem. He could have been comfortable still. But he stayed urging his people to go. But then we see in verses 4 through 9, part of this vision and part of what Daniel sees. So it takes place during the first month, which then was called Abib, on the 24th day of the month, which would be later what we would know as Nisan. Daniel sees the vision while he's standing, and he tells you, like Daniel, I like Daniel the way he writes, he tells you right where he's at, by the river, so you don't get confused, the Tigris, even he writes it right down there, he's by the Tigris River, and he's accompanied by others. He doesn't give the name of others. So we think, well, who are the others? They're probably servants. Because Daniel, he's a government official. And where he goes, there's going to be people that are servants that will go with him. So he's there and he sees this vision. But I think it's interesting, those that are with him, they don't see anything. So we know this vision is for Daniel, and it's for Daniel's eyes only. Now, can you imagine being with somebody, being somewhere, and you've got three or four of your better friends with you, and you start seeing things, and maybe you start talking about it, like, hey, what is that? Like, what's what? Did you see that? Did you see that guy? What are your friends going to say? Yeah, what did you smoke before you came out here? You know, what is wrong with you? That's kind of, this is it with Daniel. What he's seen is, as we look at this and we get the description, what he sees would appear to be pre-incarnate Christ. Now, we'll go into this a little farther because I don't think he sees Christ, and a lot of theologians argue about what he's seen. I love studying Matthew Henry, and Matthew Henry believes this is Christ because the description we'll look at in Revelation, it's almost exactly what John saw. But I'm a big John MacArthur guy too, and he doesn't believe it's the pre-incarnate Christ. But as we go through this, I'm going to let you decide who you think it is. But let's look at verses 5 and 6, and we get this description. I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and feet like the gleam of polished bronze. And the sound of his words like the sound of a tumult. Now, if you'll turn to Revelation chapter 1, that's back here in the back of your Bible. Just turn to the right. Revelation chapter 1, and start in verse 13, it says, "In the middle of the lampstands I saw one like a son of man." So we know when we hear someone like a son of man that it's referencing Christ. "Clothed in a robe reaching to the feet, girded across his chest with a golden sash. His head and his hair were white like white wool, like snow. And his eyes were like a flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze when it has been made to glow in a furnace. And his voice was like the sound of many waters. In his right hand he held seven stars, and out of his mouth came a sharp two-edged sword, and his face was like the sun shining in its strength." We see that vision, and it's very similar, or we see that description, it's similar to the description in Daniel of what Daniel sees. But I don't think it's the same as what Daniel has seen. I don't think what Daniel sees here is pre-incarnate Christ, but we know it's a divine being, that it's a holy being. If we would look ahead to verse 13, and I shouldn't jump ahead, but I'm going to, but it says in verse 13, as Daniel is getting this messenger is talking to him, it says, "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left there with the kings of Persia." This verse here, the person that Daniel sees is now talking to him. So if Daniel sees pre-incarnate Christ, in verse 13, what he's telling Daniel is, "I had to call Michael to come and help me." I don't believe there's any demonic power that Jesus would need help with to get past. So I don't think who Daniel sees in verses 5 and 6, I don't believe it's pre-incarnate Christ, because Christ wouldn't have to call on another angel to help him. That's what I think. Now, you might find something different of that, but the descriptions are very similar of what we found, what we just read in the book of Revelation. And the result of what they seen was very similar too, because in Revelation 1:17, after John sees this, it says, "When I saw him, I fell at his feet like a dead man, and he placed his right hand on me, saying, 'Do not be afraid, I am the first and the last.'" We know who John sees there is Christ. And if we would see Christ in his glory as John had seen him, we wouldn't be able to stand and look at him. Daniel finds himself in the same situation, that he falls flat on his face. But think about this, if we've seen an angel, and we know that angels can appear, I think, like as people, but if we've seen an angel in their glorious form, would we be able to look upon it? I don't believe so. And what happened with Daniel is he was overwhelmed. And overwhelmed to the point where he fell flat on his face. His strength was gone, it says. He became pale in color. After what Daniel seen, there was a physical alteration to Daniel. Everything about him, it changed. I can't imagine, we couldn't handle seeing God face to face. We couldn't do it. When Moses didn't see him face to face, but as he passed by, his face shone. I liken this a lot to, at work a lot of times, we'll do work on white rubber roofs. And so there's nothing worse than working on a white rubber roof in the summer when the sun is bright. The only time worse, so we did a project at the Nestle factory when that was built, and I worked on all the rooftops there. And I worked on those in the winter. It's a white roof with white siding, and there was about 4 to 6 inches of snow on the roof, and the sun was out and no clouds. And it's so bad, you can't open your eyes without sunglasses on those roofs, it's so bright. Even with sunglasses on, you have to squint very heavily. That wouldn't even be anywhere close to seeing God. I don't think we would be able to handle it. Sinful man is not built for anything that's divine. We couldn't look upon it. Daniel is overwhelmed with what he saw. It causes him, in verse 9, it says he falls into a deep sleep. And I don't think that this was, I think it was a comforting sleep that Daniel falls into. Because if you've ever been scared, you ever had a bad dream where, let's just say, this is the dream that women have all the time, somebody's chasing you, and you wake up, what do you think about for a while? Are they here? Let me ask you this. If you have a dream like that and you wake up, do you get up and go check all the doors that are shut? Probably not. How quickly do you go back to sleep? And how restful do you sleep? Now we look at the vision that Daniel's had, and this angel is spoken to him, and it causes him to go into a deep sleep. Now, we're not into the vision yet that he completely has here, but I think Daniel finds some comfort in this vision. This is the only way that Daniel would be able to rest and go into a deep sleep. So he sees the vision, and he hears the word from the Lord, and he falls into this deep sleep. I'm going to stop there and not go on to verses 10 through 19 because we're just going to get started in it before we have to quit. So as a bonus for you, for me going 50 minutes last week, you got 30 minutes this week. So I'm going to let you get out of here. Anybody got any questions?